The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 8, Text Number 52, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on October 18th, 2008, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 8, Text Number 52. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Om namo bhagavate
Evaṃ bhagavato rūpaṃ Subhadraṃ jayato manā Nivṛtyā parayā turaṇaṃ Sampadaṃ na nivārtate. Translation and purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. One who meditates in this way, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down from meditation upon the Lord. Purport. This fixed meditation is called samadhi or trance. A person constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord cannot be deviated from meditating on the form of the Lord as described herein, the Archana Marg, or the devotional path prescribed in the Pancharatra system of devotional service for worshipping the deity in the temple, makes the devotee think constantly of the Lord. That is samadhi or trance. One who practices in this way cannot deviate from the service of the Lord, and that makes him perfect in the mission of human life. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Mada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. Na nivartate, never comes down. This reminds me of in the old days, in the original center of 26 Second Avenue. They made one flyer to appeal to all the hippies. They said, stay fi forever, no more coming down, you see. So, by chanting Hare Krishna, you see. So, this is confirmed here. There's no more coming down. Na nivartate. You never come down. Stay high forever. You never come down. So how do you attain that position? That is called samadhi or trance. So how does one achieve that position? To where you're so high that there's no more coming down ever again. So that is the precise subject matter of today's verse. How to stay high forever and with no more coming down. This method is, and it is being practiced here, archana, you see, the Pancharatra system, to worship the deity in the temple. You rise early in the morning, the deity is woken in the morning, his clothes are changed, he's bathed. Everyone in the temple is a servant of the deity. Everyone comes into the temple room, they bow down before the deity. There's cooking for the deities, there's cleaning for the deities. The temple is cleaned nicely for the pleasure of the deities. Everything is done for the deities. So in this way, throughout the day there's the arti ceremonies going on. In the evening there's the arti putting the Lord to rest. And everyone engages in the service of the deities. The preachers who go out, they're recruiting more servants for the deities. You see, the book distribution is to recruit more servants for the deities. So the deities are seen as the lords of Copenhagen, just like Prabhupada named the Radha Krishna there, our Soho temple now, the Radha London Ishvara. And in the same mood, they've made the Radha Moscow Ishvara in Russia. So the deities, they are actually the lords. The whole city of Copenhagen belongs to Shishi Gornitai, you see. So by preaching, right now the servants of Shishi Gornitai, they're in Maya, they're not serving him, they're neglecting him. But by preaching, then we can induce everyone to come and become the servants of Shishi Gornitai. So this absorption in serving the deity is the topmost position. Actually, Prabhupada said in his final days in Vrindavan, there is no person more fortunate than the pujari of the deities. You see, he is in the most fortunate position because he gets to be in samadhi 24 hours a day. He has to rise early in the morning and take his bath in time to go wake the deities. He can't sleep late, you see. He has to be up in time to wake the deities. He's on call for the deities day in and day out, day after day. He has to be clean at a certain time. He can only eat at a certain time. He has to mold his life around the requirements of the deities. 24 hours a day. His 24 hours is completely molded around the deity service. So there's actually no more fortunate position. And I remember when I was traveling with His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj, how dedicated he was. Maharaji and I travel with a little Radha Damodar. They're in Tallinn right now because of Maharaji's illness. But these were named by Tamal Krishna Maharaj. These were named after the big Radha Damodar that used to travel with him. Before they traveled with him and Vishnujana Maharaj, they chanted with, at that time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was the GBC in India, and Vishnujana Maharaj was traveling with them in the U.S. Tamal Krishna Maharaj did not join the Radha Damodar party yet. He was a later recruit to the Radha Damodar Party. The Radha Damodar Party was started by, I was one of the charter members of the Radha Damodar Party. It was started by His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj. And then later on, Tamal Krishna Maharaj came in and expanded it into many buses. Vishnu Jana Maharaj just had one bus. But anyway, he was the pujari of the deities. Vishnu Jana Maharaj, he loved serving Radha Damodar. He was in total bliss. It was just a simple old bus at the time. There was nothing fancy. It was an old school bus. There were some platforms. You put the gear underneath it. You sit on top of the platforms. It was really austere and simple, but we were in total bliss. We were traveling with Radha Damodar. And in the back, there was a little kitchen area, the back part of the bus. And then in the middle, there was the bhujari, the altar. So I remember in the morning, the brahmacharis would go out in book distribution, and I was doing some campus preaching, and I was also one of the brahmacharis. But he would do the puja every morning, Radha Damodar's puja, And then he would rub their bodies with sandalwood oil. And then after the puja, he would come out without washing his hands. He'd let us all smell the prasadam, sandalwood oil, from his hands, from having touched the deities. And it was so the most sublime thing to smell that sandalwood oil in Vishnu Dharmaraj's hands after he had, you know, massaged the Lord with the sandalwood. It was just the most incredible thing. So the whole thing revolved around service to Sri Sri Radha Damodar. Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party. And it was a wonderful, wonderful life to be on the road with Radha Damodar. I remember, and then also we used to do that when we were in New York City. Vishnu Dharmaraj used to bring Radha Damodar out on the street. He made a portable altar. He would bring them in front of the public library in Manhattan, and we would do, and we would be fanning them with a chamara whisk right there on the street. People would walk by, and there's Radha Damodar being worshipped on the street. You see, we would have kirtan and fanning, the whole puja right there on the street for Sri Sri Radha Damodar. It was amazing. Prabhupada had authorized that these deities could travel, so actually the... How did they get the name Radha Damodar? That's an interesting story too. They originally had been the deities. These deities are now in Gita Nagari in Pennsylvania. That's where they're being worshipped now. But the Washington D.C. temple in the U.S. had gotten these deities. They hadn't installed them yet, so Kirtan Ranamaraj more or less borrowed them to take them on his traveling preaching program. Of course, they never got returned, but anyway, devotees were traveling with them. They had it evolved into a rock opera, actually, that would be performed in the universities. The universities would pay money for us to come and do the program on their campus. They'd pay us like $1,000. In those days, that was a lot of money. They pay $1,000 for us, and they give us the auditorium on the campus. They pay us $1,000 to come and put on our rock opera. And Radha Damodar were the stars of the show. But anyway, devotees were traveling around with Radha and Krishna on the bus, but so they wouldn't fall over, they tied them with ropes. So Prabhupada said, "Oh, you're tying with rope, you can name that naughty boy Damodar." Because that is the name, you see. Damodar means one who is tied. Udar means belly, and Dhamma means rope. So the literal meaning of Damodar means the rope-bellied one, the one who is tied around the belly with rope. And he's called Damodar. The one who is tied around the rope, the belly with rope, he is Damodar. So anyway, it was very wonderful. We were totally absorbed. In fact, the original pujari of ISKCON, a very famous Mataji, Mother Shalavati at the time, she came and became the pujari for Radha Damodar. And we were just totally immersed in serving Radha Damodar. In fact, at the height of the party, we had three buses. There were three converted school buses. One of them was a temple room where all the seats were moved. In the back of you had the altar, Radha Damodar over there. And then we had another bus, which was the equipment bus for all the, you know, the amplifiers, the costumes, our own personal, you know, belongings, sleeping bags, you know, in the front of the bus. And in the back part, no, wait a minute. No, I have it wrong. There was a kitchen bus with sinks and stoves, pots and pans, boga, and then the back of the kitchen bus, there was a wall, and then you entered through the back door. The bujari room was in the back of the kitchen. And then the third bus was the equipment bus. It was just loaded with, you know, amplifiers and, you know, guitars and drums and madungas and kartals and costumes and scenery and our personal belongings. So we were traveling in this caravan of three buses, a whole group, big group of devotees traveling with Radha Damodar, putting on this the rock opera in different places around the U.S. Vishnu Dharmaraj was the leader of the whole thing. So I remember Mother Shilavati, she said that any service that you're doing, she was talking about specifically serving Radha Damodar, that was her mentality, but she said, if you have any service that you're doing, you should do it in such a mood that you can go on doing it eternally. You see, any service we're doing for the Lord, just let's, like I see every morning, you all mop the floor here. Very nice, keep the floor very clean for the deity's pleasure, you see. Now just imagine, when you're mopping the floor, let me do this in such a mood of bhakti that I could mop this floor for all of eternity and dive deeper and deeper and deeper into the rasa of cleaning the Lord's temple room floor, deriving ever-increasing nectar for all of eternity from that service. You see, this is the mood. Whatever service, whether we're chanting, whether we're reading, whether we're preaching, in this way, whatever we're doing, we should dive deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. This is called samadhi, you see. You don't do something begrudgingly, oh, the authorities want me to do this. No. Take everything as the greatest mercy. I have gotten this opportunity to clean the temple room floor for Shishi Gornatai. You see. Actually, Lord Chaitanya, there's his famous pastime, the Gundicha Mandir. Cleaning the Gundicha Mandir. There was a contest to see who could get the most dirt. Lord Chaitanya was cleaning. Everyone was cleaning the temple. It was complete transcendental bliss. When I was at Vishnujan Maharaj, I remember he engaged us like that. One time the Austin devotees, we went up to visit the Dallas devotees. So what he did, he engaged all of us Austin devotees. As soon as we got to the Dallas temple, we were the guests, but he had us clean, do a maha cleanup of the whole Dallas temple. That was the engagement. All the Austin devotees, as soon as we arrived there, immediately clean, completely clean the whole Dallas temple. So, this absorption in devotional service brings us into the state known as samadhi, where we derive ever-increasing happiness, as confirmed by Maharaj Vrishabhadeva, who is an incarnation of Krishna. Nayang deha deha bhajang naloke kashtan kraman arhate vidbhujangve tapo jivang putra ki yena satvang should yadyashad brahma saukam tvanantam. My dear boys, of all the different forms of life that one can accept in the cycle of birth and death, this human form of life is very, very rare, you see. One should not abuse this human form of life by imitating the ways of the dogs and the hogs who eat stool. Rather, you should perform the austerity of devotional service so that you can achieve that divine position where there is unlimited, ever-increasing happiness. You see, the plane of spiritual bliss. You see, this is the goal of human life. We are meant to achieve the plane of spiritual bliss. We are not meant to remain drowning in the ocean of grief, birth, death, old age, and disease. So this is very nice here, these words, na nivartate. If you will absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness, you will not fall down. That's a fact. You will never fall down. You fully absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. There'll be no more coming back to adiatmic, adibhautic, the world of adiatmic, adibhautic, and adidaivic miseries. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
You mentioned that we should perform our service in such a way that we can keep on performing it indefinitely. But sometimes we don't have so much time for the service.
No, whatever time you have, do it with full love. I'm not saying you should go on doing the service. You have to do everything in the proper manner. Not that I'm offering an arti. I go on for 24 hours. I'm in so much samadhi, I'm going to offer the arti for 24 hours. You know what I mean? You have to follow your schedule.
But what I mean is that sometimes we don't have so much time, so it's difficult to get the consciousness into it also. You're trying to get it done, so how to deal with that?
Well, that means you have to chant better japa. You know? That means you're not very... When you're given a service, if you can't do it in a mood of bhakti, that means you're in the mood of passion. You haven't cultivated properly sattva guna. You're just going on in rajaguna, mode of passion, with no spiritual enlightenment, just some kind of a passion to get work done, is it? That means you have to become more sattvic. That means you have to dive deeper into hearing and reading and chanting these teachings. You have to go deeper into your japa. When you attend the arti, when you gaze upon the Lord, you have to go deeper into that darshan of the Lord. You have to become more sattvic, that's what it means. When you're completely sattvic, if Prabhupada could do anything and be completely in bliss, you see, anything he can do. Totally in a mood of bhakti, no matter what he was doing. Everything was service to his spiritual master in Krishna. I remember I was there with Prabhupada when he was offering the arti to his Guru Maharaj on his Guru Maharaj's appearance day. The day I got my Brahman through it, also very auspicious. But Prabhupada was offering the arti with such depth, if you know what I mean. So, with such deep feeling, he was totally into that arti. You know, everything, ringing the bell, the normal, you know how we do, normal thing. But everything was totally dovetailed with the pleasure of his spiritual master. He wasn't just doing something to get it done. He was expressing his love for his spiritual master by the way he was offering the arti. So actually, this is everything we do should be an expression of love for our spiritual master and for Krishna. Everything should be done for their pleasure and satisfaction, whatever service we're doing. This is the key of how to be always in this state of samadhi or trance. You understand? Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, I have a difficulty. I've stayed here in the temple for some days now, and I find it helps a lot. To keep the mind focused at one service to Krishna. But as soon as I get out of the temple and go home or something, it's very difficult to maintain the spirit. Just that
you live with your parents?
Yeah.
But they're not devotees?
Yeah, so as soon as I say something...
Do you have your own private room?
Yeah.
You have to make your room in a little ashram, you know. Have an altar, your own little enclave, you know. Yeah, you're in enemy territory, basically, when you leave that temple. You have to be an undercover agent, you know. The undercover agent blends in with the society in which he's living, but his heart is not there. Just like the Al-Qaeda people who blended into the U.S. before they blew up the World Trade Center, you know. Before they, you know, flew into the World Trade Center. They blended in. They looked like they were good Americans. They made a show of blending in, but in their heart they were always thinking, we're going to blow up the World Trade Center. We're going to get those Americans. We're going to teach them a good lesson for not bowing down to Allah. You see. So you have to be like an undercover agent. Of course, not to blow up the World Trade Center. But for the sake of blessing everyone with Krishna consciousness. Yeah, you're now an enemy. When you go home, you're in enemy territory. Not that we're inimical towards them, but they are enemies of your... Right now, they're enemies of your Krishna consciousness. Maybe innocently they're enemies. I'm not trying to... paint them as Satan or something. And we love our parents, we respect our parents. That's part of Vedic culture. But by their own conditioning, they are enemies of your Krishna consciousness. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, and you know, just by nature of the culture that they grew up in, the way they've been conditioned, they're enemies of your Krishna consciousness. So you have to be Krishna conscious in spite of their association. You have to understand, you have to generate all of your, here you're getting, the devotees are helping you. There, everyone's sucking it away from you. Knowingly or unknowingly, they're sucking away your Krishna consciousness by the way they deal with you. So that means you have to become the leader. Instead of allowing them to suck your devotional energy away, you have to come in now. Now you're the leader. You see, you're the only Krishna conscious person in the house. So that makes you the leader of that house, actually. But, you know, they're not going to accept that, of course. But you have to just gradually take over, you know. Just like the salesman who gets the proverbial salesman, the door-to-door salesman, he knocks on the door and they say, no, no, no. But he somehow gets his foot in the door. Just let me talk to you for 1 minute. He gets in. Once he gets in, then he pulls out the vacuum cleaner. He says, I'll do it free. I'll clean your living room for free. Show you. And then they end up selling you a $500 vacuum cleaner, even though you were saying, no, 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 no. So you have to be like that salesman that you've got your foot in the door already because you're their son. You already got your foot in the door. Now you just got to take advantage of having your foot in the door and gradually take over. You become that to be, and gradually take over the lives of your parents and make them devotees in due course. That's what you have to do. And even if you're not successful, you have to always try because that'll protect you, you see. In your heart, you're thinking, I have to make them devotees. Because they're going to go down to the and become animals in their next birth if I don't save them. So always be thinking, what can I do? Can I bring some prasadam from the temple and feed them? Take something really, some real goodies, you know, that they would like, you know, from the temple. And feed them prasadam. Here's some special food. They know you come here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They ever been here?
Not yet.
Huh?
Not yet.
Uh-huh. But they're willing to let you come.
Yeah.
Are they preaching against it? Okay, well, that sounds like they're pretty new. Are they atheists?
Yeah, but it's not like...
Not hardcore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you should... Here's some tips. You know, be the nicest son you've ever been in your whole life. And they'll go, wow, there must be something good about that temple, you know. Volunteer to do things like vacuuming the... You know, taking out the garbage. Be a better son than you've ever been before in your whole life. And they'll go, wow, there must be something good over there. We see him. He's never been this nice and this loving a son ever before. You should be more friendly, more nice, a better son than you've ever been before. But you know what you're doing it for because you want to attract them to Krishna so they can you can save them from birth and death. So in this way, take it as an exciting year. Now you have you're a secret agent number 008, you see. And you have a mission. I'm personally now. Now that I've heard all the details, I'm personally instructing you to go there on my order. You have a mission to make them Krishna conscious. So now you're going there as a service to Shri Gaura-Nitai and Srila Prabhupada. You see, you're not going out of any material reason. You're going there with a mission to make them devotees. So that mission now will protect you from being polluted by the atmosphere. Okay, any other questions? Yeah.
How to keep this mission feeling or preaching spirit when one is back in the temple? I feel it's easier when one is out selling books, for example, to have the right mood of compassion. And
How do you keep a preaching mood when you're at the temple?
Huh?
How do you have a preaching mood when you're at the temple?
I feel it's much easier when out trying to distribute.
Well, it's very easy. Practice. It's very, very easy. The temple is a place... just like here, I have this MP3 recorder that's engaged in the preaching work. It's recording my lecture. So sometimes it's not doing that. I take the batteries and I put them in the recharger, you see. Shri Gaura-Nitai Ki Jai. So whether the machine is actually being used in recording a lecture or, which is the preaching, or the batteries are being recharged. Isn't it all part of the preaching? See, the temple is the place where you recharge your batteries So you can go out and preach again. So it's not the, it's in charging, getting, just like I go off and I do these around the world preaching tours. And it's very enlivening to be out on the preaching trail, circling the globe for Prabhupada, going from country to country, giving lectures, and inspiring people to surrender. You know, it's a really enlivening thing what I do. But sometimes I'm back at my home base in Austin, you know, planning the next preaching tour, you know. Booking, you know, making the bookings, the mundane arrangements for the airline, you know. Making the bookings, so... But that's also enlivening because I'm getting ready for my next preaching tour. So when you're back at the temple, you're just charging your batteries. You're getting yourself more empowered by learning verses, by becoming more deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. You're just charging your batteries to go out again and preach even with more potency. So the temple is not a place for eating and sleeping. Don't think of it like that. Think of the temple as a place to become, to recharge your batteries so you can go out and become even more powerful. So in that way, the temple is very, should be very enlivening, you know, for you. It's like, it's the holy dham. I remember when I was in Atlanta Temple back in 1975, we had, you know, devoted a very fired up book distribution temple. Prabhupada actually said this was the best temple when he visited the Atlanta Temple. He said, I've been to this temple and this temple and this temple, but I can see that your temple is the best. And everybody roared, Jai. But, and there was vans, you know, we had many, many vans loaded with brahmacharis going here, going there, everywhere, distributing books, going to the airport, going to this city, that city. It was a beehive of activity. And I remember one of our most fired up book distributors, Gayatri Prabhu. He used to say with great relish, Prabhupada had given the name for the, there's a holy place in India called New Panihati where the chipped rice yogurt festival took place. So Prabhupada said they could name Atlanta temple New Panihati Dham. So I remember Gayatri Prabhu, he used to be, when he was out on the road, he'd say, okay, now we got to go back to the dham. Like that, with great relish. Going back to the temple was it, even though he was a fired up book preacher out on the road, but going back to the temple was also a very, very wonderful thing. Now going back to the dham. He used to say it like that. With great relish, you see. Because the dham was the place you could have the dharma. It was Gornatai deities were there. Prabhupada had personally come and gone into transcendental bliss, looking at those Gornatai deities, losing external consciousness, going into a state of trance, having darshan of Shishi Gornatai. And it was a place where Prabhupada spent many, many days doing many, many amazing, wonderful pastimes that I witnessed actually. So it was a very and it's still a wonderful place. Even today, Prabhupada displays amazing pastimes sometimes there. In his deity form, during one kirtan, Prabhupada began to cry tears of ecstasy. The murti began to actually cry. We saw the tears coming down Prabhupada's right cheek out of his eye. The deity was crying. So it's a pretty amazing place, New Panihati Dham, still to this very day. So these temples are places where we recharge our batteries so we can go back out and preach with even more energy, with more power. So one should not feel, if you're feeling a lack of enthusiasm in the temple, that means you're not perceiving the temple in the proper way. You're seeing it in the wrong way. You're seeing the temple through material eyes as a place for eating and sleeping. You should be seeing the temple through spiritual eyes as a place to recharge your batteries, to go out and preach with even more power. That's what you should see. Yeah.
It's just one problem may be here that we don't have time to go out. We have some maintenance to do here in the temple and guests are coming.
Well, then you have to utilize this, then you have to preach from here. I remember my service one time for a whole year. They sent everybody else out except for me. I had to hold down the fort for a whole year. I held down the fort. I had to offer all the artis. I had to cook the deity sweets. I had to wash all the dishes. I had to answer the door. I had to answer the phone. I mean, it was so intense that one day I actually mailed a letter, and I walked one block from the temple to mail a letter, and I couldn't believe it. Wow. I somehow managed my schedule. I was able to get away from the temple for 10 minutes. I was flabbergasted. This is unbelievable. Somehow, by Krishna's grace, I was able to walk one block and mail a letter. It was that intense. I couldn't leave the temple. But I preached from the temple, you see. People used to come and visit me at the temple. And they, even years later, I remember one doctor used to come and take his lunch there. And years later, he never forgot his associating with me. He used to come to the temple because I was really Krishna conscious. And he would come. He was very inspired by my association. So, if you're not able to, my service, you're forced to stay back, then use the temple. Then you be a powerful preacher here. Because actually there's no one more dear than one who preaches to the devotees. Preach to the other devotees. You see? Most of my preaching is actually done in the temples. Most of it. Some doing a Nam Hat program today. But mostly my preaching is focused in the temples to inspire you. And you're preaching, you see. Prabhupada's preaching was mostly in the temples. He didn't, of course, in the early days, he did personally distribute books. But later on, he engaged his disciples in doing that. And he just preached to his disciples and, you know, and to guests. His mostly preaching was in the temples and special outside arrangements, you know, engagements of a book for him. Of course, wherever he went, he was preaching, and people were just by his mere presence, people were absolutely transformed. They were amazed. Just walking through the airports, people would be absolutely amazed. Who is this great personality? There was a black man at the Los Angeles airport. Just, you know, a cleaner, sweeping the floors, you know, just what they call janitor, just sweeping and cleaning. He saw Prabhupada. He just went totally, he became totally uncontrolled, ecstatic. He said, "See that man? See that man? He's shining! He's shining!" He just started yelling in ecstasy. He's shining. He was seeing an effulgence on Prabhupada. "See that man? He's shining! He's shining!" He was seeing that Prabhupada had a glowing effulgence from his body. He was seeing Prabhupada's aura, this beautiful spiritual effulgence coming from Prabhupada's body. And he just started yelling out loud in total bliss, you see. So Prabhupada, you know, just by walking down the hall in the airport, he was preaching. Because he was just emanating Krishna bhakti, like Prabhupada is like a volcano, you know, an erupting volcano, spewing Krishna prema in all directions, you see. So anyway, you should become like a volcano, spewing Krishna prema in all directions, whether it's here at the temple or on the street. Anyone who comes in your contact becomes enlivened. You become Krishna conscious. You should be like that. It's called acharya. You think you're not supposed to be an acharya? Actually, Prabhupada told us in Mayapur. He said, "Now we are 10,000. And then we will grow to 100,000. And then we will grow to 1,000,000. And then 10,000,000. He said, "There will be no scarcity of acharyas." These Ritvik people, they say there's only one acharya for ISKCON, and that's Prabhupada. These people don't understand. They've never taken the time to properly hear what Prabhupada has to say. And they think they're the authorities and what Prabhupada's teachings are. They don't even, their brains are so, they're so prejudiced by the propaganda of the Ritvik people. They can't even, you know, they can't even see what Prabhupada is saying. Prabhupada said we will have 10,000,000 acharyas in ISKCON. So where are we going to get them? Are we going to bring them from India? Going to import them from India here? Or maybe we should. Maybe you should be an acharya also. What do you think? Yes, you must become an acharya. So that means you have to become very learned in the scripture. You have to be very expert in citing verses and showing your practical example. You have to be clean, you have to be neat. Everything first class, you see. That is acharya. So in this way, whether you're in the temple or you're on the street, you'll be preaching. And whatever, everything that you're doing, everything that you're saying, even your very thoughts will be manifesting preaching energy that will bless the temple and bless the atmosphere of this city. That's how you should be. And then whatever your service is, you can do it. Look at Janani Vas and Pankajangri. For years they never even left the temple in Mayapur. Do you think they're not preachers? They're some of the most powerful preachers on this whole planet. Those two twins that became the Pujaris at Radha Madhava, you see. For years they never even set foot off the property. They're some of the most powerful acharyas on this planet right now, those two brothers, you see. So whether your service is to take, if you're taking care of the deities, you should do it so nicely that the whole world will be attracted to Shishi Gornitai, Copenhagen Gornitai. You see, whatever service you're doing, do it so wonderfully that the whole world will become attracted. And then you're a powerful preacher wherever you may be. You don't have to, wherever your service, wherever your authority dictates to you, whatever instruction your temple authority gives you, you follow that instruction. And do it in a first-class way. And in this way, you'll be a powerful acharya who can make the whole world Krishna conscious. Anything else? Yes.
Because we do everything for getting back relationship with Krishna. Yes? And is it possible to get this relationship with Krishna?
Can you tell me what he's saying?
Saying that everything we do is to regain our lost relationship with Krishna, mm-hmm. But is it possible to do that without connecting with the devotees?
The answer is no. Because the way to connect with Krishna is through the devotees. This is confirmed by Krishna himself when he spoke to Arjuna. This is a wonderful, wonderful verse from the Adi Purana. Ye me bhakta jana partha, na me bhaktascha che jana. Mad bhaktanam che ye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, one who is claiming to be my devotee, he is not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my real devotee, you see. So the only way to connect with Krishna is through the medium of devotee. Therefore, Rupa Goswami states in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.174, Adau Gurashrayam, the very first principle of bhakti is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The very first principle, the first step. Because it is only by approaching through the medium of a devotee that we can be connected with Krishna. He never accepts us if we try to directly connect with him. He'll never accept. Forget it. Never. Only when we approach through the medium of the bona fide spiritual master, then Krishna will accept. So your question is very nice. I appreciate your question. And the answer is, you must go through the devotees, through Guru and through Vaishnavas, both. And then you become connected very nicely with Krishna.
Seems that even in the temples there's a lack of this connecting between devotees. There are some people that think that they can go directly to Krishna.
They are called impersonalists. Yeah. They will never attain Krishna. If a devotee is thinking like that, he can be accepted by Krishna without having a nice relationship with Guru and with Vaishnavas. He's an illusion. You'll fall down eventually and leave this movement. I can guarantee you. Anyone who thinks they can be Krishna conscious on their own, their days are numbered in this movement. They will be gone sooner or later. They won't stay. It's only one who can, and I've been here for 37 years in this movement, since 1971, 37 years. And I've seen people come and go. Rank and file members, big GBCs, big gurus and sannyasis, I've seen them come and go. And the number one cause for fall down is they don't have good relationships with the devotees. If you want to make it in Krishna consciousness, you got to learn how to have loving relationships with the devotees. You have to. Otherwise, you'll never make it. Never make it in 1,000 years. You never make it. Yeah.
But in this connection, it seems that some devotees are using the fault-finding mentality to see the problems in other people's lives, and they're using that to
an excuse.
As an excuse not to associate with them. So how to deal with that?
Well,
and especially how to convince them to take up the association.
How to convince them to associate?
To associate with the other devotees.
Well, the thing is, such a devotee who can only see faults in other Vaishnavas, he's very low level. He's called Kanishta Adhikari. Let's see. He can only see faults. If one is meditating on the faults of others, that means you're doing nothing but increasing your own faults. Whatever you meditate on, that's what you manifest. Prabhupada explains that every person has a combination of good qualities and bad qualities. A devotee is one who looks for the good. There are two types of insects or little creatures. There's the flies and there's the honeybees. You see, what does a fly look for? He looks for stool. If you have an open wound on your hand, he wants to go for that wound, you see. That's a fly. What does a honeybee go for, stool and a wound? No, he goes for the honey. So a devotee is like a honeybee, and someone who looks for the faults, he's a fly. So we have to train our devotees that if you act like a fly, you're going to be a fly, and that's all you're going to be. If you want to become Krishna conscious, you have to be like a honeybee. It looks for the good. Now, of course, you have to see what's wrong in others. I'm not saying you shouldn't. Because if I want to advance in Krishna consciousness, and am I associating with you, I'm being influenced by your association, you see. Now, I have to see what your good qualities are, so I can use them to give me more energy to be a better devotee myself, and I have to see what your bad qualities are, so I don't follow those, you see. It's not wrong to see faults in someone else, but it has to always be subordinate to seeing the good in that person. If I don't see anything wrong in anyone, that means I'm a naive fool. You know, let's say there's some brahmachari who's out here smoking marijuana, you know, he falls down, and I think everything's good, and I say, well, and I smoke marijuana with him, you see. You have to see, oh, Prabhu, this is against the principles. You're not supposed to do that. You shouldn't have marijuana here in the temple smoking marijuana. You know, you can't do that. So you have to see the difference between what's proper and what's improper so you can be properly situated. But at the same time, if you know that here's a person who has some faults, you know those faults are there, but you're more interested to see his good qualities. You want to encourage him in his good qualities to become even better, you see. To say, well, you can only see the good in others, that's artificial. And it's not even healthy for your Krishna consciousness. You have to see both, but you have to always see that the good is more important than the bad. You have to always give stress to the good and think the bad is not very important, because if I encourage him in the good, then his bad's going to go away. In this way, I think, this is how things should be in ISKCON. We should always see the good qualities. If you're meditating on the good qualities of others, then your good qualities will become even better. In this way. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes, but that brings another question.
Okay.
Because in this connection, some devotees, they use circular reasoning in order to facilitate that they should not accept the authority of those that are trying to help them, actually, because they see the bad faults in them. So it's kind of a problem that people, they think they can be their own authority, they can connect directly to Krishna, and when you want to help them, they don't want to accept that advice that you give them.
Well, in that case, here's it. If somebody doesn't want to hear from you, what can you do? There is something you can do. Somebody doesn't want to hear from you. This is a principle in sales. If somebody, you have to get to sell something to someone, that you have to get them to listen to you. And if you want somebody to listen to you, they have to like you. Although if they don't like you, they don't want to hear from you. That's the reality. If you want them to hear from you, then they have to like you. Now, how are you going to get them to like you? You have to like them. So here's the real solution. If I see that you have a fault and I want to help you get over your fault, I can't just come in. But I can't come in to you when there's no relationship of love and trust and say, look, you know you got this fault. You're just going to take it as a threat, you see. But if I establish a loving relationship with you, and you know I really care about you, I really love you, I'm really one of your best friends you have on the planet, then you'll be willing to hear from me. So if somebody is in that position, then you have to befriend them. You have to show that you love them, you care about them. You have to really go out of your way to make that person love you, because you're giving them so much love, and then they'll love you in return. And when they love you, they'll take anything you have to say. You see, they won't take it in the wrong way. They'll trust you then. They'll trust your advice if they know that you really love them, you really care about them, and you wouldn't do anything to hurt them. Everything you're doing is for their benefit. That's what you have to do. You have to build a loving relationship with those persons. That's the only way. You can't do it by passing a GBC resolution. Nowadays, who cares about the GBC? And that's the mood nowadays. Of course, in the old days, it wasn't like that. But there was one devotee who had that attitude in the very beginning. He didn't last very long. I remember. There's a saying in English, got a big chip on your shoulder attitude. It means you have a really negative attitude. It's called chip on the shoulder attitude. It means a negative attitude. So he said GBC means got a big chip. So in the very beginning, he was one devotee. I was shocked that somebody could say that about the GBC. And those, the GBCs were, you know, Prabhupada's men. His best men. And that someone would say that, it was shocking. But then, you know, how could someone be an ISKCON and say such a thing? A brahmachari living in the temple, you know. But then we heard him, and we heard a darshan that he had with Prabhupada, a tape of the darshan he had with Prabhupada in L.A. He was finding so many faults with ISKCON. You know what order Prabhupada gave to his disciple? I was shocked. You know what order Prabhupada gave him? He said, go earn money and enjoy. That was the order Prabhupada gave. In other words, get out of our movement. We don't want you here. Talk about a heavy order. Prabhupada ordered him, go just earn money and enjoy. That was the order Prabhupada gave him. He was such a troublemaking person. Just earn money and enjoy. That was the order that he got directly from Prabhupada. Earn money and enjoy your senses. I mean, can you imagine that Prabhupada would tell a disciple that? That's how bad he was. So, yeah, that was the. But then gradually, you know, after Prabhupada left the planet, especially, the GBC becomes like a dartboard or something, you know. Everyone throws their darts at the GBC. You know, dartboard, you know, GBC dartboard. Now, I blame the GBC for everything, you know. Actually, it's my own fault, you see, that I'm not happy in Krishna consciousness because I'm not following the principles, I'm not chanting around, but then I blame it on the GBC. I'm miserable because the GBC isn't doing their job properly. It's their fault that I'm not happy in Krishna consciousness. That's what people do. They want to blame it on the temple president, blame it on the GBC, blame it on the GBC body. In this way, you know, instead of taking the blame on themselves, Prabhupada said, if you're not happy, it's your own lack of Krishna consciousness. That's all. People want to blame it on someone else. You know, the movement's screwed up because of the GBC. The movement is screwed up because we are not Krishna conscious. That's why. If we are Krishna conscious, this movement will flourish. We don't depend on somebody else. Let us be Krishna conscious. That's a very simple thing. If we are Krishna conscious here in Copenhagen, the movement will flourish here in Copenhagen. That's a fact. We don't need anything else. We just have to be Krishna conscious. That's all. So all this negativity is just a cover for their own faults, really. Instead of blaming it on themselves and actually getting out of the hole they've dug themselves into, they want to blame it on others, and this way they always remain in the hole. If they'll blame their lack of Krishna consciousness on themselves and take responsibility for their own lack of Krishna consciousness, and actually try to do something about it by chanting good rounds, by learning how to bow down at the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas and with genuine feelings of humility, then they'll see everything gets completely turned around, and we'll see that Prabhupada's words are completely true, that this movement will save the world in its darkest hour of despair. Any other questions? Yes? What is she saying?
She's saying that she would like to see the peacock feather on the deities, but I don't think it's connected to this.
You want the peacock feather on the deities?
She would like to see the peacock feather when they dress the deities.
I see. I don't know what the standard is for Gornitai. I can't remember. So you can keep one photograph of Radha Krishna. They must have peacock feather. But I can tell you, Mataji, don't be in this mood of wanting Krishna to entertain you.
To entertain? No.
That Krishna, I want you to see what I'm saying? Don't be in the mood of I want Krishna to entertain me by putting a peacock feather on. Because I want to see it. You should be thinking, how does Krishna want to see me? You see? Instead of thinking, I want to see a peacock feather on the deity, you should be thinking, how does the deity... I'm saying you have it backwards. You should be thinking, how does the deity want to see me? Not how I want to see the deity. How does the deity... Darshan means not how you... Actually, the real meaning of darshan is not how I see the deity, but how the deity sees me. That's the real meaning of darshan. So... instead of thinking, how I want to see the deity with peacock, you should think, how does the deity want to see me with tilak? You see? That's how you should... If you wear the tilak, then you'll be very satisfied by the darshan, because you have shown the Lord the way He wants to see you. You understand? The greatest respect is for you to wear the tilak.
Yes.
Krishna wants to see you with the tilak. That is how that is the greatest respect, when you can wear the tilak in front of the deities. Because He wants to see you with the tilak. Now, I don't recall if Gornitai can wear a peacock feather. I don't know. Probably not, but I'm not remembering right now. Gornitai never wear peacock feather anywhere in ISKCON. Is that the standard?
We heard about that. Gogovindasamy, one of our...
Huh?
Gogovindasamy.
He said they should not wear...
One of our very powerful teachers in ISKCON. He said that they should not put peacock feather.
He said there was none, yeah. So that it would make sense, because this is the Lord in His mood of being a devotee. You see, Lord Chaitanya is an undercover incarnation of Krishna. He is Krishna. And Krishna wears peacock. But this is an undercover incarnation where he's hiding his identity as being Krishna. So, but if you become a very, very pure devotee, then you can see the, it's like in our Sophia temple, we have Sadvuj, the six-armed form, in which there is Lord Chaitanya, there is Lord Ram, and Lord Krishna, all in one form. So that form is where Lord Chaitanya and Krishna are actually showing in the same form. There is that Shadbhuj form that was seen by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Jagannath Puri. So, if you become a highly advanced devotee, then Krishna can do anything to please you. But you have to be totally in the mood of pleasing the Lord. And that means by following the basic sadhana, wearing tilak in front of the deities. Even if you're afraid to wear it outside, you can make arrangement to put it on when you come to the temple. That will give great pleasure to the Lord to see you wearing the tilak. What is she saying?
She wanted to put a round dot.
In tilak, some guru wear, or blot in gold tilak, for example, some celebrities in green.
No, she's asking if we're supposed to wear Udvapundra or just one dot like some Indian.
No, this is the standard tilak of all the Buddhas are wearing. This is what Prabhupada wants us to wear. Oh no, it's not it's not a matter of feeling worthy. It's a matter of the more you feel unworthy, the more you should. We should feel ourselves most unworthy. That's a fact. We are not worthy to even set foot in the temple, actually. Are any of us even qualified to walk through the door in the presence of God? None of us are qualified to even set foot in this temple. Actually, that's the reality. I'm not qualified to set foot in this temple. I'm not worthy of even being allowed in the door. You see, that's the mood. But we do this to please Krishna, to please Lord Chaitanya, to please Lord Nityananda, because to please Srila Prabhupada. They're very happy when we wear the tilak. We're not worthy. I'm very, very pleased with you that you feel unworthy. This is very, very good. I'm very happy with you. Because that's a fact. We are not worthy to wear the tilak. But we do it for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of Lord Chaitanya, the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. Yes?
Just one comment about the tilak. Actually, the Udvapundra means that it's an upgoing path. So it doesn't mean that we are on a very high level, but we are searching to go upwards. So that's
tilak means you're praying for the mercy to be delivered from this material world. You're begging for the mercy. We can pray with our lips, and the tilak also is a way of praying to Krishna, please pull me up and pull me out in this world. You see, you're praying with your tilak. It's like a symbolic of praying to Krishna. Actually, it has two things like this. It's like your two arms like this, see. Begging Krishna, please save me, you see. You're here, and then your two arms are here going up, begging to be saved, you see. It's a prayer. You're begging Krishna to save you, so it's very nice. So, when you become completely pure devotee, then Krishna can do anything to please you. That's a fact. He can do anything and everything to please you. But at our present stage, we should not think like that. There was one devotee, he wrote a song, and Prabhupada was very, very much disturbed by this. There's a famous thing in maybe Europe or America, Little Boy Blue. Some nursery rhyme or something. He wrote a song called Little Boy Blue, come tootle your flute, come play us a tune, Little Boy Blue. He was praying to Krishna, you please come and play your flute for me, Lord. When Prabhupada heard that, he was really, really very, very disturbed. We should never ask Krishna to come and do something for us. You see, it's the wrong mentality. That mentality is very wrong. We should never ask Krishna to serve us. should always see how I can serve Krishna. That's the right mood. And when you become completely, totally sold out to serving Krishna, then Krishna will do whatever you want. He will drive your chariot for you like he drove Arjuna's chariot. But you have to be on the level of Arjuna, completely sold out to Krishna. And that day will come and he'll be under your control. Actually, that's described that Krishna is ajita. He cannot be conquered, but he becomes conquered by his devotee's love. If you become a pure devotee, then Krishna will do whatever you want him to do. He'll become under your control, like Mother Jasoda, tying him up. You see, you'll be able to tie him up by your love when you become a pure devotee. But now, on the level that you're at now, the level all of us are at now, we are called the level of a sadhana bhakti. On this level, we have to follow the rules and regulations and devotional service. And then gradually we'll come to that perfectional stage where Krishna becomes our personal property and we'll do whatever we want him to do. But that only comes when we're completely, totally sold out to doing whatever he wants us to do for him. Is that clear? Does that make it clear? Good.
She asks if you said that she should be in love with Arjuna.
No, not in love, but love.
And love Arjuna.
The level of Arjuna.
No. If om jeg skulle holde af Arjuna for ligesom at øge Krishnas kærlighed til mig.
She is asking if she should develop some affection for Arjuna in order to achieve love for Krishna.
Yes, you must learn. You must cultivate affection for all the Vaishnavas. You should think, what a great devotee is Arjuna. Yes, yes, of course. You must learn how to love Arjuna by hearing about his wonderful qualities. Arjuna, all the Vaishnavas, the wonderful devotees described in Prabhupada. Yes, yes. The more you love the devotees, the more you love Krishna. That's right. Yes, it's very good. You should always think, what a great devotee is Arjuna. You see, in this way, cultivate your affection for Arjuna. Very good. Yeah. Okay, we're going way over time. The next program will be a Namahat program this afternoon. Everyone's invited at the home of Madhavananda Prabhu. Gantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His grace, Sankarshan Prabhu Ki Jai.